Welcome to Really You, a podcast about wearing your voice well, brought to you by Reitmans. I'm your host, Chris Bergeron. In this episode, we are speaking with Louise Green. Louise is a coach, an athlete, an author, and an activist. In 2017, she wrote her groundbreaking book, Big Fit Girl. She works restlessly to change the narrative around body size and beauty standards in the fitness industry.
Hi, Louise.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us for this this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And so you designed a t-shirt with us, with Reitmans.
Yes.
Would you describe it for us?
So it's a black t-shirt with a big heart on it that says the words, fearless, powerful, beautiful.
Is that your motto in life?
Yeah, when I was thinking about the shirt, I was thinking about like what words do I stand by and how do I want to live and how do I wish that other women would live as well? And those are the three words that came up for me were being fearless, you know, even in the face of fear, doing it anyway, and really being powerful, tapping into our power as women and embracing your beauty no matter what you look like or what idealistic standards you compare yourself to, just feeling beautiful in the skin you're in.
And the t-shirt is connected to a cause also.
Yes.
Could you tell us a bit more about that?
So the shirt is connected to a foundation called the Girls Action Foundation that is actually based in Montreal, I believe, where it started. And it's a national cause that helps women and girls that are underprivileged.
That's important to you, the notion of solidarity?
Yes.
So, you're a trainer, you're an author, you're an advocate, you're an athlete, you're a coach. What are you first?
I would say that I'm an advocate first. So the advocacy is really the writing and the training and the coaching, and my own athleticism falls under really pushing the advocacy. So I would say that that's really what the umbrella is.
And do you think these things overlap a little bit?
Yes, I think that there's ways to communicate your message, and I do a lot of that on social media and through working with brands to show, you know, audiences out there that there's diversity. And through my own athleticism and the writing that I do, like it really all curates the same message.
How did you get to that notion of athleticism and to open athleticism to a variety of bodies? It must have taken a bit of a mental process to get to that point.
Well, I think in my younger life, I always felt like an athlete, and I had always participated in athletic ventures throughout elementary school and high school. And through my 20s, I kind of lost that. I got more into a party lifestyle and cared more about, you know, boyfriends and things like that. So, but I think that we have lost really the identity of what it means to be an athlete in our society. There's very strong images and messaging of what it actually means, that it's ripped abs, that you're young, that you're, you know, have that typical athletic looking body. And when you look in the dictionary, when in Webster's dictionary, it says under the word athlete, a proficiency in fitness and sport. And so I really felt that a large part of the population was lost in that, because most people can be proficient in fitness and sport. We've created our own meaning of it, and it's isolating people.
And I imagine it's also an attitude. What's the mindset that makes an athlete?
Well, it's funny, when I first train women, when they come to me and I refer to them as athletes, they get very uncomfortable and they don't identify as that. But over time, when they've been training with me or, you know, around the language that I use, it's really about being powerful and showing up for yourself. And I think if you lace up and show up and follow the path of fitness that you want to do, whether it be ballroom dancing or, you know, something more intense like CrossFit, who knows? If you're showing up and staying dedicated to the process, then I believe you're proficient in fitness and sport and therefore an athlete. So I want people to adopt that mindset and that persona. And so once they start to get into it, they start to understand that and really identify it as it. It really is kind of changes people. It changes them in a way that they feel more confident about themselves and like they're part of, you know, the human race, unquote, quote unquote, you know, that they're part of it.
So it's almost as if, well, I mean, it's not as if, but being healthy and practicing sport is a right, and it's a universal right.
It is.
Yeah. I imagine that the big challenge of what you do is trying to keep that level of interest and motivation in these women that from the start probably are doubting themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you get that to happen? How do you make sure that in the third week and the 25th week and the 50th week, they're still around and they're still on?
Mm-hmm. So I create a successful environment. And I think that that's really what's been missing for people is that they go to gyms where they're misunderstood. The trainers don't know how to deal with their body. Mm-hmm. They don't feel like they're represented when they walk into the gym. There's no imagery that looks like them. The way that fitness is presented is very hardcore, where I always tell people to go slow and easy. That's the way, and that there's no fast results. So I'm not selling anything that any other gym is selling, because we've all been duped multiple times, especially if you've been entrenched in diet culture. You've spent a lot of money and you've had a lot of promises broken. And so what I do is I snap the reality and say, this is something that takes every day micro decisions to do it differently. And we create an environment where everybody cheers them on, where they feel represented, where they're amongst like-minded people, and that the exercise is something that their bodies can handle so that when they walk away, they feel like that I felt very successful in that.
So there's a sense of creating a safe space.
Very much so.
In a way, which is something that doesn't exist elsewhere in the sports world. And do you think things like CrossFit or those very aggressive forms of you know, workouts are, in a sense, a bit your enemy? Is this something you have to fight against? Or do these approaches to fitness live and coexist side by side?
Well, I think it really depends on who owns the CrossFit box, because I've heard people say that larger women say that they go to CrossFit and they love it.
Right.
And it really depends on who's managing the situation and how well-versed they are into fitness for everyone. And I don't blame trainers. It's not something that we're educated on through our education system in the fitness industry. There's no talk about health at every size. There's no talk about how to manage somebody that's over 300 pounds or the mental barriers that they're facing. There's no talk about the in-depth work that really goes beyond, oh, well, that person's overweight, we need to get them skinny.
It's almost as if the ambitions of people that don't already fit a box don't count at all.
I don't even think that the ambitions of those people, like that there's even an idea that there are other ambitions aside from weight loss. Like, I don't think a lot of people acknowledge that not everyone's goal primarily is to lose big whacks of weight off their body. People, you know, especially as we get older, they just want a better quality of life. That's mm-hmm. really what I hear mostly, and they'll say it in various ways, and in ways like, I want to play with my children, or I want to go hiking with friends and not feel worried that I'm going to get left behind. Like, it all narrows down to a better quality of life. I rarely hear people say anymore, you know, I have a wedding coming up, I want to lose 30 pounds, or, you know, I think times are changing, and people are starting to recognize that commercial weight loss doesn't work.
What do you think these things are changing? Obviously, conferences and workshops like the ones you do count. What are the other, I guess, major tides in society now that are pushing towards that acceptance?
Well, I think that there is a very strong body positive movement happening.
Yeah.
And fat acceptance movement, where people are starting to really rebel against this idealism. And I'm really proud of the younger generation that are below me and below them, because they actually aren't having it. They're just, they a lot of those young women, you know, they're on to it. And I feel like I feel like times are really changing because of social media, because now we have the power to create our own media. We don't have to rely on, like, I remember when I started running, I'd never seen a woman my size run. I'd never seen her in my community. I'd never seen her in a magazine because it was before the time of social media. And so now I can go onto social media and hashtag plus size fitness, and I can be elated with scrolling for hours on all different body shapes, you know, really empowering themselves through fitness. And that just didn't exist before.
It's interesting because social media is both a blessing because these communities sort of spring up out of these platforms, mm-hmm. and a bit of a curse because that's also where you see a standardization of bodies that are happening.
Yeah.
It's a war that is being waged right now.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting that recently even Instagram has started to kind of squash some ads that you can't sponsor ads, or you can't even post posts, I believe. I'm not well versed in exactly what their regulations are, but that are promising weight loss or before mm-hmm. and after and things like that. And I know from doing Facebook ads myself, mm-hmm. you have to be very careful and articulate in how you present your ad. Mm-hmm. So social media, the people that control the social media are even very on to the fact that we don't want to be selling empty promises anymore. We don't want to be giving false hopes to people.
You have a very vibrant Facebook community as well.
Yes.
What kind of conversations happen on there?
Well, I have a private Facebook community that is women from all over the world that post their exercise photos. Mm. And we have a no food policy in that group because I find that it caused a lot of tension in there.
Oh.
So people can't just talk about food in any way. So it's all fitness related, and it's so empowering. And people will say that they're having a hard time, and everyone will chime in and elevate that person, or just really cool imagery of people doing all different kinds of things, like, you know, anything from CrossFit to like swimming in the English Channel. You know, women of all shapes and sizes, or anyone that identifies as a woman is welcome.
And what are some of the common challenges that these people face from around the world?
I think the common challenges are what I spoke about earlier, where there's just they're misunderstood, or mm-hmm. they're an afterthought, or they're not a thought at all. Mm. Where a lot of people feel sidelined in this culture of fitness and health, really. I mean, if you look at any health and fitness advertising or media, it's very rare that you'll see a larger body or even a body over the size of size eight.
Yeah.
And I think people feel really just not included. They're not represented. And if you look at the statistics in the USA, over 60% of the women are plus size. So we're talking about an invisible majority of women.
Which is insane that they are not catered to.
Yeah.
Although, as you say, it's changing.
Do
you think that plus size women have a tougher deal than let's say plus size men in North America?
I definitely do. I mean, I think that men's currency doesn't rely on their looks, mm-hmm. whereas sadly, and I don't concur with it, but a lot of women feel like their currency is in the way that they look. And I think a lot of society thinks that their currency is in the way that they look. So I think that it's more acceptable for a man to be larger. And I think that the clothing has been there for that man, and that man hasn't had as many barriers to getting into fitness clothes or entering gyms, or just doesn't have the same currency on how they look.
So it feels, in a sense, that the women that come to you already have done a bit of work on themselves to be able to say, no, you know, I'm going to be healthy, and I don't need to go the route of over, you know, dieting and things like that. Or do you actually speak to women who are just at the beginning of that process?
I definitely speak to both women. So there's women that come and they are ready to do something different. They've tried the diet. They are done with tracking everything that they eat. They're done with the start and stop, failure and attempt. But then there's the other women that just come because they want a safe place to exercise, but they're very much still entrenched in diet culture. And I think that I try to convert them from that. And I'm not saying, like, don't lose weight. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that typically losing weight by ways of restricting and pulling back to the point where you're hungry is going to backfire on you. Mm-hmm. And sustainable weight loss is, the statistics around it are very low.
Do you feel that, because there's a sense of rebellion in everything you're seeing, because you, mm-hmm. you are fighting against something that is systemic.
Yes.
I wonder, what was the first act of rebellion for you? When was the moment that you realized that, in fact, you weren't fighting against your body, but against a system, that you had to think broader, in a sense?
Well, I found a running coach. I joined this running clinic, and it was a 5K clinic, and I was trying to lose weight. And this woman introduced herself as our run leader, and she was plus size. So the minute I saw her, mm-hmm. she was very symbolic to me, because she wasn't like, oh, I'm here because I'm trying to shed calories or anything like that. She never once mentioned bikini season's coming or how many calories we expended that run. Whereas in all like the step classes or the fitness classes at the gym that I would go to, there was always that barrage that went along with it that mm-hmm. was kind of like, you know, tank top season's coming, like real, like undertones of shame underneath the motivation. So she was very iconic to me, and I trained with her for 12 weeks. Her name was Chris. And then I went on to open up my own business eventually. And I remember one of the earlier times, the media was really interested in my business because it was dedicated specifically to plus-size women. And the province newspaper in the province that mm-hmm. I live in, they did a front page feature on my business. And I was super excited. I did all the interviews. They came and looked at my classes, took pictures, did a big write-up. And when I went to go get the paper on the Sunday morning, it said, "Gym bans skinny people." And it caused such a ruckus. Like, I had media outlets, I'm not even kidding, from Ireland calling me that I was like banning skinny people from my gym. And it was then that I realized, like, I had kind of been flying under the radar till that point. And I was like, no, this isn't happening. I'm not doing this. I'm not being discriminatory, which is what people were saying. What I am doing is being inclusionary. This mm-hmm. is an inclusion. And just how misunderstood I was and these people were. And that's really when I was like, I'm fighting this. I'm not sitting down anymore, and I'm not keeping my mouth shut, and I am going to fight for this cause.
That it's shocking. It's almost mean-spirited that they would write that. What do you think happens in the heads of people that write things like that?
They just want to sell papers. Like that particular newspaper is a little bit tabloidy. Mm-hmm. Same thing when I went to the UK, when I wrote my book, I went to do some touring there, and they just got a hold of it. And it was very controversial in a very mean-spirited way. Mm. And I think that there's still so much fat phobia out there. And I think that people are still wanting, anytime they see a larger person liberated, mm-hmm. they wanna kill it.
It's probably one of the phobias that are the most present and accepted, because it doesn't deal with something that is necessarily innate, like where you were born or your mm-hmm. skin color or thing. So people tend to believe that perhaps it is a choice to mm-hmm. be plus size,
yeah.
which is being entirely ignorant of how the body works, of course. Mm-hmm. How do you convince people that it's one thing to actually have women who are plus size come to you and then, you know, you mentor them, but people who are not and have that kind of opinions, how do you convince them that they're wrong?
Well, I did spend some time trying to convince people for a while.
Yeah.
And then I just decided my energy is best spent working with the women and empowering the women that I want to empower. Like, I think when somebody is fat phobic or phobic of any kind, it takes a lot to convince them otherwise. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's something that's inbred in them deeply, and I just take a position of that's not where I want to spend my energy anymore. And further to that, why hate on people that are trying to do something to improve their health?
Do you still get hate mail, or do people still...
I mean,
still...
anytime that there's any media piece, there's usually one person or two people that will reach out, and it's always a man between 35 and 45 that's white. It's always the same guy. It's always, yeah, usually a bodybuilder type person that, why do you care?
The whiteness is an interesting thing as well. Because
it's always a white guy.
There is a diversity of bodies as well.
Yeah.
And culturally as well.
Yes.
There's a variety of how women are represented, and it's a shame that everybody should have to have that sort of ideal of the skinny white lady. Yeah.
Or why some men think that you need to conform to please their gaze. I mean, I don't know. Like, why this specific demographic of men are the ones that are always the ones that come to the table with the hate?
Have you had men come to you and ask to coach them as well? Or would you open the door towards coaching plus-size men as well?
I have actually trained several men. They're usually a client's husband.
Right.
So... they'll usually come by way of a friend or a family member of somebody that I'm already training. I really want to focus on women. I think that it's not just the actual movement that I do. It's a lot of the mindset around body image and body positivity that goes along with it. And I feel like it really is... I mean, men also suffer from body image issues as well, but I feel like the way in which I coach women, it's best served on women.
Do you keep in touch with some of the women that you've coached? And that must be rewarding to be able to have that.
Yeah, the business that I've ran for many years, it really formed a community. So like I'll see people on Facebook getting married and I can see, you know, 10 of my clients there. Like they really formed a bond in a community because I think it was a place where they finally felt accepted.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Do you think... or, you know, is it opening a chain of centers across North America? Is it more books, more education? There's so much going on in your life.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of physical training with people anymore. It's mostly online. I am writing another book, so that's coming out in January. So I'll be busy the next several months working on that project. I really like brand partnerships. I think it really amplifies the voice. And I think that in the next 10 years, it'll become more of a consulting role where I would be consulting gyms and brands on how to message and reach and motivate, inspire this audience.
So to really bring it into the mainstream as much as possible. Because I imagine there's only so much you can do in your own bubble, and now you have to actually. It's an ambitious project to do that. Because we were talking a little bit before about not having to convince others that are not part of the community, but it seems like you're sort of going into that direction if you're going to talk to companies that haven't covered that ground yet. Mm-hmm. But I suppose they come to you knowing that they have a problem to fix.
Yeah, I've worked with some companies already, and they do come, and they are, you know, we're wanting to expand into more different, you know, I think many companies right now are looking at their diversity plan.
Yeah.
I really think that they are looking at, and companies that you wouldn't think of, I just did a brand partnership that I was like, I wouldn't have ever thought this brand would want to widen their diversity, but brands that really aren't female related, that really aren't, you know, fitness related, that they're also coming to the table. Like, we want to be more inclusive.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful that is a very positive thing that so many brands right now are focusing on their purpose as well and trying to be more inclusive.
Yeah.
It's a sign that things are changing for the positive.
Well, I think that they really are. And I think like the conference that we attended in Chicago, the 3% conference, I think like that's really speaking to the ad industry and it's in a much broader sense where this is what the public wants. I think the public in general really do want to see a likeness to themselves.
So at that conference, as you said, the 3% conference where both you and I spoke on at different times, you talked about sizeism as the word, and we haven't mentioned that word yet. Do you think that's something that's in the mainstream, the notion of sizeism?
I think that sizeism lives everywhere. I really do. I see it in my son's, you know, his friends that come home from school.
Oh, it's there, but do people identify it as such?
No. No, I don't think I think that it's so ingrained that I don't think people even think there's anything wrong with it.
So part of your work is probably to put a name on the disease, in a sense, on that particular form of hate.
Like, really interesting. I was watching television this morning, and it has closed captioning on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to turn it off in my hotel. And when they're describing an individual that comes onto the scene, they describe the person. And when a larger person, they say a larger person comes onto the scene. And I thought, that's really interesting. Why do they have to say he's larger?
Right.
Like, even that in of itself, it's like, that's kind of sizeism. Like, why are we describing his body when we're not describing a thin man walked onto the scene? That really struck me. So I think it's very, very small. It's very micro in our society. And sometimes it's not. It's right in your face. But it is everywhere.
And your fight is not just fitness then. It's also the way people think. And it's the words they use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the way people present themselves. That's a huge undertaking.
Well, I think what it is for me is that for so many years, I felt terrible about myself. And I found a way to not, and that was through athletics.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be everyone's avenue or vehicle, but it's the language and the way that I feel that women can be oppressed in such a severe way where they're so preoccupied by it that they can't really do anything else. Like, it's just a preoccupation all the time about how they look.
So you're like opening mental doors in a sense, unlocking women.
Well, I want people to live to their highest potential. And if you're constantly worried about how you look and, you know, how big you are and all of that stuff that people worry about all the time, it's impairing.
How does that happen in a class, for instance, or in a tutorial, or how do you pass that message along? Because I imagine it has to focus on the physical and actual workout techniques and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something it's little hints, ways of speaking to those ladies? How does that work?
Well, I think one of the ways I think honestly, fitness in of itself makes you feel powerful.
Yeah.
And that, like, I really got that from it without having the diet culture barrage undertone with it, where I was treated like an athlete by this woman, Chris.
Right.
To dig deep and run hard and for no other reason than to live to your highest potential. That was it.
So just doing it is the message.
Yeah.
To not quote another brand.
Yeah, exactly. Just slip that on in there.
Sorry.
So when I start to work with women and we, you know, we're digging deep and I'll use those words like find your power, like I really feel like it elevates people to the point where they've had a successful time, they want to come back, they've got the sense of community, and I really see people's self-esteem and confidence elevate.
Maybe we can end with this, your definition of power.
I think my definition of power would be to really embrace everything that life has to offer and that you're aligned with. Because I see people aligned with things that they're too fearful to embrace. So they don't go that path because their fear holds them back. To really feel the fear, to follow the path, to let your inhibitions down and just follow your alignment and really feel your power as that happens. I mean, I don't know if that's clear enough, but that's to me just really like following the path without the inhibitions of fear.
Those are very inspiring words. Thank you so much.
Thank you.